The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 4 podcast.
And we welcome you back. The final hours has arrived, and we are delighted to be joined by the commissioner of the Southeastern Conference, Greg Sankey, joining us. Good afternoon, commissioner. It's so great to... I'm embarrassed because I didn't realize we were going to show the tattoo right before you.
Yeah, I don't know what to do after that. I think I should just take the AirPods off and walk away.
Yeah, I mean, I'm surprised I haven't been reprimanded by the SEC office after that. Well, it's great to have you with us, and there are countless places to begin, but I would just always like to start with, have you been, and what's been going on in your world? Seems like a lot.
Yeah, it's a busy time. You know, Paul, what's interesting is almost the last 2 weeks have been what I would call normal, in that when you're in the fall football season, there's a cadence to what happens. You know, you play games on Saturday, and there's obviously plenty to do for a few days after. That's just kind of normal work. We've got the college football playoff conversation, the NCAA Constitution conversation. All dressed up today because I spoke to a group that's here from the Sports Entertainment or Sport Event Travel Association. Great meeting with our presidents a week and a half ago, but I'll stop and answer your question, which I'm sure will be more interesting than me talking about my daily agenda.
Well, Commissioner, I would like to start with something that we hear all the time about, and I don't know how there is a solution to fans being unhappy. You get it every day, and usually on Mondays. But the officiating question comes up, and I know that's always something that you're concerned about and talk about. So what can you say about where is the state of officiating in the SEC?
So officiating is an incredibly difficult task. We should start with that as a fundamental. Second is the experience around our games is an emotional experience. People are attached to their teams. And there are going to be any number of close circumstances in a game. And depending on how you view the impact on that team is often how you view the effectiveness of the official. There are realities. So we acknowledge what was a breach of mechanics and expectations on a punt return. Not that we misapplied rules, but we had an official waving hands to kill a play, but we didn't follow through on that. A lot of the other noise is actually related to correct outcomes. There may be close outcomes, they may be outcomes that a fan base didn't like, but they're nonetheless correct outcomes. That's not to say that officiating's perfect, but when you take the challenge of officiating, the emotion attached, people are going to have strong opinions. It is our duty to continue to improve. So we've had a change in our officiating coordinator. We've had changes in staff. We do have accountability. What we don't do is issue press releases every Monday and say we're suspending or eliminating this official. I think that's first disrespectful. Doesn't make you any better. And we've been clear that our accountability is applied in an internal basis. That said, when I look at other conferences. In fact, when I watch games on Sunday, officiating is challenging. And despite the fact that there are going to be errors, discrepancies, disputes, I think our officials perform at a very high level, particularly given the high level of play in this league.
Commissioner, the biggest criticism from fans in terms of comparing college football, it's not the SEC, but just college football in general with the NFL, is that most of these officials, well, I think all of them, are part-time, where in the NFL, I believe it's full-time. Is that a solvable issue to make officials full-time?
As I understand, the NFL has some full-time officials, but it's not a full-time staff. And when I look at the dedication of our officials, and I'll speak to other collegiate conferences, the amount of time they dedicate to their craft is substantial. And if you take an individual and simply make them full time, does that really solve the dynamics of the game? So if we take a step back from the emotion, and Wednesday is probably a good day to do that, things are happening so fast on a football field, and particularly when we see sped up offenses, which is just a reality that we have to encounter in college football, That makes decision-making even more demanding. It has to happen more quickly. The evaluation points are still the same, just in a compressed period of time. So we have to adjust to that. Having full-time employees doesn't solve those realities, particularly, Paul, when you understand that there's a dedication of time by officials. As soon as the national championship game is concluded, our officials are working on preparing for next year, and they work on their craft throughout the season as well.
Commissioner, it seems like we've seen a lot of fines levied from your office, and also a statement by you, a couple of statements about what happened a week and a half ago at Tennessee. I think we all would like to hear your thoughts on behavior and how to deal with it.
So the fines we've had three field rushing incidents, and we've not had three field rushing incidents in a full season, and we had those almost back to back to back. And fundamentally, our conference as a group came to a conclusion back in 2006, 2007, that fans entering the field of play after a contest, football and basketball, creates a problematic situation. Now, we've been fortunate this year. We've not had any real aggressive encounters. But when that rule came into effect, we had had some circumstances where I would submit we were fortunate not to have real direct altercations. You know what? Players and coaches belong on a playing field. They belong on a basketball court after a game. Fans do not. And so that's the fundamental expectation. Now you look and you say, hey, what a great celebration of a win. That's college football. That's the emotion. We actually went back to our athletics directors a week ago now and said everyone has to address their post-game plan. First of all, we don't want fans rushing the field. Second of all, it is the host's responsibility to protect the visiting team. And so we're actually receiving those updated plans last week through this week to make sure we can provide security around teams. The situation in Knoxville is unique, and I recognize that there are fans who are upset because when Tennessee played basketball at Ole Miss in 2019, after the game, there were items thrown on the court. We had a basketball game in Georgia. One fan threw an item on the court, resulted in a technical foul and an incredibly close game. We have not had, and I'm a few days away from being in my 19th year as a member of the SEC staff, games interrupted by fan behavior like that. That's just not happened. And I greatly appreciate the leadership of Chancellor Plowman, of Athletic Director Danny White, in addressing the issue and following up and looking to learn how they can improve. But we also have a responsibility across the conference. And so a fine in that circumstance, I deemed appropriate. It was specified after that incident in Oxford that we would have the immediate imposition of fines. And because we have alcohol introduced, I have the authority to remove the alcohol sales opportunity, which is defined in this league as a privilege for our members. We didn't do that, but we reminded everyone that possibility is there if we have misbehavior that interrupts games in the way it did that particular night.
We're chatting with Commissioner Greg Sankey. We are under a week before we start hearing about what the committee with the college football playoff is going to talk about. And as we digest that information, fans are going to be wondering what does the future look like. You're pretty close to that situation in terms of expansion. And it's been a long summer and a lot of conversation. Where are we right now?
Yeah, long summer indeed. In fact, what a long 18, 19, 20 months since March of 2020. First of all, the good news is you'll never have me on Wednesday again, right? Because Tuesday will be the CFP rankings and everybody will be able to fill programming. That's the great gift of those CFP selection committee announcements. I think it's been made public that we've got some meetings coming up in November to look again at the 12-team playoff. I was a part of that group. So let's just dispel a couple of talking points. Our responsibility, and I've said this to you before, I'm going to say it again, was to look at college football, look at the four-team format, which I think can continue to work, but also look broadly at the health of the game. And that led a group of us to identify a 12-team playoff as one that can provide conference champion access, so six of those, and the remaining six best teams to participate in a national championship. That's a national championship. And we've had conferences at the autonomy level that have been in two of 7 years total. We've excluded the West Coast largely from the playoff. When you look at the standings now, who knows what will happen, but we may have more conferences excluded from the playoff. And so the 12-team format brings people in a healthy way. It is separate from any other events, but we have important issues to discuss. I'm hopeful that we'll be prepared to make a decision. Much of that will depend on the perspective that my colleagues bring to the table and whether or not we can address and work through the issues that they identify. There's been a lot of work. I think it's been a healthy conversation. We expected the need for time beyond the summer to work through issues, and we'll see if we can come to a finish line. But I'm certainly prepared to do so. And we're talking about years 11 and 12 of the current agreement, so the 24 and 25 season. We also have to acknowledge that the 26 season, which would be an entirely new set of CFP agreements, that that's coming up rapidly. So if we don't decide now, we're going to be back in this conversation in the next 12 months, and we should be prepared for that reality as well.
Commissioner, the other topic that comes up a lot, and I'm sure wherever you go speak, wherever you're walking around, people ask you, like, when we're really thrilled that they're probably saying, I'm putting words in their mouth, but the Texas and Oklahoma are coming into the league, but when? I've asked you this question every time I see you, and I don't expect the answer to have changed, but I am curious on, well, maybe I would like to know if it has changed. Has it?
No, it hasn't changed. You know, I will say, there is excitement. You know, you go back to that interview we had, we want to be respectful, and we are focused on an orderly transition. Those have been mantra points. And I respect the difficulty, but you've seen the world of college football shift in the aftermath. And so people are preparing for the future. We're preparing for our future. It's still July 1st, 2025. And as I've cited previously, there are commitments that have been made contractually within the Big 12 Conference involving the University of Oklahoma and University of Texas. That's very different than some of these past expansion efforts. And so we want to be respectful, and we want to prepare for an orderly transition. If something changes, we'll keep that in mind and be prepared. But the focus is on July 1st, 2025.
I know at the time that there was certainly a lot of things said. And depending on where you sit, you could interpret it any way you want. But since then, there's been change. You know, a lot of conferences switching teams, including the Big 12, has taken in four new schools. Does that impact at all where the SEC is or where Texas and Oklahoma will be?
I think the SEC impacts others. And we knew that around decision making. We didn't know exactly how, but I think that impact for us is a positive turn to our future. I look at the excitement that I've heard from both of those universities. I just go back to Fayetteville, Arkansas, week two of the season, and a rivalry that actually has a decades-long history being renewed, and a victory for Arkansas. And while we want to be careful about fans rushing the field, you saw the enthusiasm for that competition. So I know that's there, and you know, what happens around us is informative. I've said this phrase before, but we've made determinations about how we're going to view our future.
Commissioner, as we close, it is still remarkable to think about where we were in our conversations a year ago versus where we are today. And I think we'd all be interested in your perspective on this long journey. Things aren't perfect, we know that, but there does seem to be a lot of normalcy in the SEC right now.
Yeah, the emotion's there, the intensity's there, the rankings are there, the expectations for the next 5 weeks of college football leading into Atlanta and our championship game are incredibly high, so it does feel that way. We have the ability to manage through the COVID environment. We don't have control of that environment, which means we have to be continually vigilant. And Paul, particularly for our fans, as we go indoors for basketball, the messaging that we've shared continuously about accessing vaccines, being smart about health protocols is real. Our teams have to be wise as well. That said, I just made this presentation today where I went back to January of 2020, and my observation was, wow, if you had told people in January 2020, what was ahead and all they'd have to work through, particularly in leadership positions, I think a lot of leaders would say, you know what, I'm out. I don't want any part of it. But as you look at what we've achieved as a league in the last 18, 19 months, I'm really proud of how we've conducted ourselves, how we've come together. You know, you look last year, we had 9 teams on our campuses win national championships. Kentucky women's volleyball, first ever women's volleyball championship for this conference. Devontae Smith, who was on nobody's Heisman watch list when we started in 2019, winning. Madison Lilly, volleyball player of the year, the Sarah Fuller story. Mississippi State's first national championship ever in baseball to finish the season. The Ole Miss rally against Texas in women's golf in the quarterfinals, I think it was. You can go on and on about the phenomenal stories. And so in the midst of uncertainty, we manage really well. We have to be continually vigilant, and we can achieve those same high expectations this season. And I know there's a lot of emotion around officiating. We're going to work to get it perfect. Where we don't, we're going to work to continue to improve. But I love the feel of that passion around our games again, and that normalcy that we all cherish about the Southeastern Conference.
The commissioner of the Southeastern Conference, Craig Sankey. Commissioner, it's always great to have these visits. Come back, and we look forward to seeing you soon.
Just not on a Wednesday, so we can talk about those rankings. We'll see you like on a Thursday or Friday on campus. And I appreciate you being on campus again. It's fun to see all of our campus folks rolling through, and even the tattoo scene. A little unique, but that's not happening on other conference networks.
No. Well, thank you. And I won't ask you about when you're going to get one. Thank you, Commissioner. We appreciate it very much. A fantastic conversation with Greg Sankey, the commissioner of the SEC, and we are coming right back.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free, no insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at Hims.com/Paul. That's Hims.com/Paul for your personalized ED treatment options. Hims.com/Paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan. This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to JetsPizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
And welcome back. Corky in Fort Worth starts off our next segment. Hello, Corky.
Hey, Paul. So now that Ogeron is fired, do you think he'll continue calling your show? No, I'm saying that because am I the only one that thinks Cat Daddy is Ed Ogeron?
You may be right. I've never thought about that. I think he will keep calling. Okay.
I got one more thing for you, Paul. Hello?
Yeah, go right ahead.
Yeah, I actually think Brian Kelly would be a great hire for LSU just so we can get rid of him in Notre Dame. And I'll hang up and listen to you, buddy.
Yeah, I said yesterday, Brian Kelly's not going to. I think there's a very slight chance he might end up in the NFL one day. But I don't believe he's taking another college job. Hey, thank you for the call. Appreciate it. Chandler is in Georgia. Hello, Chandler. Go right ahead.
Hey.
We're doing great. Thank you. Chandler, for whatever reason, and I'm sure it's a cell phone issue, we couldn't hear you. We'll try to get you back on the show. Sean is up next in Athens. Hello, Sean.
Hey, Paul. Always good to talk to you, man.
Thank you.
First of all,
Greg Sankey's the best commissioner in sports. I don't think there's any argument about that after that interview you just did. So
none. I agree.
Really enjoyed that interview. I'm going to kind of stir the pot a little bit. Larry was defending Pete Golding earlier. Legend obviously had different opinions, but I really think we should look at this objectively. When you look back to 2012, when Johnny Manziel beat Alabama and kind of shocked the world, do you know who the defensive coordinator was for Alabama that year?
In 2012, Kirby Smart.
Exactly. So keep that in mind. Kirby had a situation where, they kind of got embarrassed a little bit, but as we all know, Kirby ended up turning out pretty good. Also, we have to look at, the recruiting, too. Alabama's done a great job at recruiting skill players and quarterback, wide receiver, and things like that. But Georgia's kind of had their number a little bit on defensive recruits in the last few years.
Correct.
And I think you're seeing Georgia's meteoric rise in their defensive performance, and you're seeing kind of that gap with Alabama's defensive performance. And I think a lot of that has to do with the tides have shifted a little bit in Georgia's favor. They have the best defense in the country, and Alabama's kind of faltering a little bit. But I just think a lot of it has to do with the players that they're getting are just not.
Yeah, Sean, you'll hear this a million more times, but people are saying Georgia's defense today looks like Alabama's when Kirby Smart was the defensive coordinator. That was really one of his goals when he got there, was to try to create something in that image. We all thought the offensive explosion was going to neuter the defenses, but it has not so far. And by the way, one more thing about that Johnny Manziel game, which I've heard a couple of times this week. Don't forget, Alabama still won the national championship in 2012 with a win over Brian Kelly. Let's continue with more phone calls here. And Jim is – not that one, but this one. Jim, go right ahead.
Hey, Paul. Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you.
Before the season started, you interviewed a student reporter, newspaper at Ole Miss named Catherine Jeffers. Do you remember that interview?
I most certainly do.
Well, for purposes, Catherine is my great niece.
Oh, wow. How cool.
What I wanted to ask you is, I thought that interview was really good, and perhaps you could schedule a student newspaper editor from each school sometime during the week, every week, have one of the student news. Their perspective is entirely different from the reporters that are on the ground, because they're also students, and they know what conversations are going on among their peers, as well as attending all the athletic events. And I thought year-round, you're in basketball, baseball, soccer, swimming, all kinds
now,
of
– Jim, I completely agree with you. And we did that. And it's – I think, the fact that I that's where I began, that's probably my favorite part of this job in terms of interviews, is talking to the young people. And it's something that I'm spending a lot more time doing. And when I go to campuses, I try to meet with some students every weekend. And I think it's a fantastic suggestion. And you give our best to her and thank her. And we'll try to reconvene. It's a great suggestion. Thank you so much. Well, we've had a busy half hour here with the commissioner. We will spend the rest of the show talking to you at 855-242-7285.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jets Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jets is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, SAVE. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jets' signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, SAVE. Jets Pizza. Better because it has to be.
Hi, it's Mike Greenberg letting you know ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sportsbook of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me, plus many more. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today. New users get a bet reset up to $1,000 in bonus bets if your first bet doesn't win. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Welcome back. Final 25 minutes as we continue here. And how about Jim? A lot of Jims tonight. Jim in Mississippi. Hello, Jim.
Hello, Paul. My name is Jim Haneke. I'm from Hattiesburg, Mississippi. I'm 80 years old. I've enjoyed watching your show for a number of years.
Well, thank you for saying that.
Last week you had a guest on, I think he was Bobby Martin. He's a newspaper reporter from Florida.
Buddy Martin,
I'm sorry. And it was a fantastic interview all the way up to the very end. I've seen a lot of things in my lifetime in the United States in politics, but I hate to bring this up, but he brought it up first when he made that statement at the end of your interview. He compared what the students did at the end of the Tennessee game to the political rally that was held in the nation's capital on January the 6th. And let me just elaborate just a minute. I don't want to get too political, but it just breaks my heart to hear that kind of a statement. When President Trump told those people to go up to the Capitol and protest, he told them to do a peaceful protest. Okay, that's number one. Number two, when they got up there, there's film that you can see that shows the police inviting those people into the Capitol building, walking around peacefully. Okay, that you can see that. And you can even see the man dressed up in the woods in uniform out in the halls of Congress. Then, in my opinion, the FBI had been behind this whole thing, getting it set up, just like they've been behind a lot of things that have occurred in our history and overthrowing governments. Okay, now that's a little bit of my last point. When you compare throwing bottles onto the floor with a policeman shooting an unarmed female woman climbing through the window, she shouldn't have been climbing through the window, but she was. She was unarmed, and she was an Air Force vet. In my mind, that's completely inappropriate. But that's all I got to say. I just had to get that off of my chest.
Well, Jim, thank you for your kind words about being a fan of the program, and you have a great night. Thank you so much. Let's talk to Bo, who is up next in South Carolina. Hello, Bo.
Paul, how are you, sir?
I'm well, thank you.
I called yesterday about the penalized and stuff for
I do remember that call.
Georgia playing in the but today I wanted to just talk about legend or is it the legend?
I think it's it can either one. I mean, would, either I mean, one works.
My question to you, Paul, just a quick question, have you ever been like, you know, you had a long day and you just want to walk in and just maybe get a whiskey or maybe some appetizer and a beer or something. And you sit down and you're just like, long day, have a beer and stuff. And you get the loudest, most obnoxious laugh in the bar. And you're like, you're minding your own business. But in the back, you turn around and it's legend. I mean, he is the most narcissistic. I mean, he's the smartest in the room. He's the loudest. He's the funniest. I mean, my question is, who gave him the legend name? What is he the legend of?
Self-proclaimed.
Yeah, exactly. My thing is there's not enough Georgia fans that call in because it's like the three Stooges. You got Larry, what's up, Jack? You know, and then you got Jeff from Tuscaloosa. He needs heavy medication. You got Jerome. He needs blood pressure medicine. I mean, that's the most – that Jerome is just like, whoa, you know. But the thing about this is you just got a couple of guys. It's crazy because if there's any year to worry about whether the dogs might beat you or not, it's this year. This is the year that George, these aren't Mark Richt's recruits. These are Kirby Smart. He finally has handpicked his defense. And look at it. He still believes that defense can win championship. He has to have a mediocre, subpar offense with this defense. I mean, so you get these guys from Alabama. They call, they're brass on the Paul Feinbaum show, but nobody ever talks about what the truth is. And this year, you should be scared that you might have to beat Georgia twice, once in the SEC and maybe once in the playoffs. That's this year, 2021. Have a good night. Go Dawgs.
Thank you very much. Frank is up next in Minnesota. Hello, Frank.
Hey, Paul. How are we doing today?
We're doing great.
Hey, Paul, I really enjoyed your recent interview with Commissioner Sankey, and I just wanted to ask your opinion. Whenever I'm lucky enough to see him, I always get the feeling that whatever room he's in, he's the smartest guy in the room. Is that the way you view him as well?
Well, you know, there's a lot of people think they're the smartest person in the room. Greg Sankey is the smartest person in the room. I tell you what, I've known him a long time, and to watch his progression as an associate commissioner, then becoming Commissioner Slive's right-hand man, to what he he got that job. He had to learn. Everyone makes mistakes early on, but I would say since COVID began, his handling of this position is absolutely brilliant. And I think you saw it tonight. I mean, you're seeing a man who now understands the stage he's on, and he's always understood it. But I think now he is. You know, it takes a long time to perfect that art, and he has done that.
He is at the height of his game, Paul. He is so polished and so professional and so knowledgeable. And Paul, I got to tell you, calling from the Big Ten country up here, leadership matters, and it's striking to me the difference between watching Commissioner Sankey and, unfortunately, our missing in action, totally invisible commissioner of the Big Ten.
You know something about Kevin Warren, and I've had the good fortune to know him, through Commissioner Slive, by the way, and I think he will grow into that job. But I am fairly disappointed with the way he's handled a number of things, and that comes to somebody who has admired him and respects him and thought he would be absolutely brilliant. But you know what? What you said a minute ago, I think, has come true. Commissioner Warren, I believe, thought he was the smartest commissioner, and he said a number of things, and he has a great pedigree, but unfortunately, he didn't understand what happens on a day-to-day basis, which Greg Sankey did, and Greg understood, what fans are interested in, what coaches want, and he was able to find a very narrow route to a season last year. It wasn't easy. I don't think people realize, even now, how close it was to not happening, and thank goodness it did. We'll take a break. More to come right after this.
Thank you for listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast. The Paul Feinbaum Show airs weekdays on the SEC Network, beginning at 3 Eastern.